afternoon, I am opening up the meeting on the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, the Subcommittee on Public Safety. Today is February 6th, 2017, and we were supposed to start promptly at 3 p.m. Man. I'm going to state why it is extremely important that we start on time. You cannot convene without a quorum, which means that there has to be at least three members over on the House side and two members over here on the Senate side. So without us doing that, we cannot have a quorum. It's also important that if you're not going to be able to attend a meeting, that you let Julie or the one of the chairs know. I think at this time, because I don't think everyone knows, we don't all know each other, that maybe it's a good opportunity for us to introduce ourselves and just say a little bit about ourselves. So, Rep. Sanchez, why don't we start with you and then go around this way.
Thank you. Tana Sanchez, I am, representative for House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. I am a Native American Shoshone, Bannock, and Ute, and Carrizo. And my other job is I'm the Director of Family Services at NAIA Family Center. Oh, not enough speaker. Everybody heard me, though, right?
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
And I'm Carla Peluso. I represent House District 50, the city of Gresham, a little piece of Portland. I am now serving my second term, just starting, so we'll see how this all goes. I am honored to be on this committee. I actually asked to. I don't deal with numbers well or money well, personally or professionally. So this is going to be a real learning opportunity for me that I welcome. So thanks.
John Huffman, state representative from District 59. Live in the Dalles and have the populated parts of Wasco, all of Jefferson County, all of Wheeler County, and the northern part of Deschutes County. And so I'm far flung, but I'm so thrilled to be here with you all today.
Jeff Parker, House District 28, Brereton and Loa. And I've been on this committee in the past and looking forward to another year at it here.
Dwayne Stark, District 4, Southern Oregon. I'm born and raised in Josephine County, which has quite a lot going on every single year related to law enforcement and public safety. So I have a great interest in this topic, which is why I requested to be on this committee.
Want me to start?
Okay. Hi, I'm Lou Frederick, Senate District 22. Three terms in the House, and I'm very interested in a number of the issues that this committee has been dealing with, dealt with in the past, and will be dealing with in the future.
And I'm Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, District 17, which is Northwest Portland, unincorporated Washington County, and Beaverton, family doc in my spare time, and interested and excited to be on this committee, which is a new one for me. Very interested in the intersection between public safety and health and human services issues, which is the subcommittee that I chair and have the privilege of having Senator Winters serve on. So.
And I'm State Senator Jackie Winters. I've both presided this committee as well as human services. I represent District 10. Which is South Salem, West Salem, Southeast Salem, Monmouth, Independence, and Amesville, and Turner. I was elected in 1999. I have served on Ways and Means ever since. 99. Prior to that, I served two governors, Governor Tom McCall and Governor Victor Tia. So my interest in both human services and public safety goes back a long way. I was involved in the creation of the Department of Human Resources in 1971. So with that, we also have a very learned and very smart legislative fiscal staff, as well as the assistant. And so, Julie, you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Co-Chair Winters. I'm Julie Naburka. I work in the Legislative Fiscal Office. I'm the committee coordinator for the Public Safety Subcommittee, but I won't always be sitting in the seat. in the Legislative Fiscal Office, as we'll talk about later, we are each assigned a portfolio of agencies that we are the analyst for. So I am the analyst for some of the agencies in the sub, and you'll also be working with my colleagues John Borden and Steve Bender and Teresa McHugh on different days. We have our committee assistant, Dawn Monaghan, and she will be with you here every day making sure that everything happens correctly.
And just before I turn it over to Julie to walk us through, our information for today, and I started the meeting with the importance of what it, to be here on time, and if you're not, to let us know. Also, we rotate chairmanships, and so I will have Monday, Wednesday. Representative Stark will have Tuesday, Thursday. So I see my. So if you have any complaints, save them for Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Or Fridays.
but you will in going through this, and please do not hesitate to ask questions. You can't learn unless you do ask. And nothing is is. I like I say, nothing is you won't know unless you ask, and nothing is unimportant. So if you have something and you need to ask it, you know, Julie is, like I said, she's very smart. You're very fortunate because you also have individuals who are part of law enforcement, a part of public safety system, and that's both Rep. Barker and Rep. Peluso. I know that Lou's been working on some of this for some time. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Julie.
Thank you, Co-Chair Winters. Subcommittee members, this will be one of the few times I hope I'll end up sitting on this side of your dais to do a presentation. But the Ways and Means co-chairs have asked us to do a little bit more of an orientation than we've done in the past. There are many new members serving on Ways and Means this year. And for the senators who have heard this and their other subcommittees, you can compare notes about who did how well. So what I'll do is you have a number of exhibits on OLIS, and I'm going to talk through the first one because it's just a lot of words. And then we have a PowerPoint that will get through part of today. We have 2 days scheduled for this orientation, so we probably won't get through the whole thing today. It's fine with me to ask questions as they come up. I think it's easier than saving them up to the end, so please feel free if something doesn't make sense to ask about it. So just for sort of housekeeping matters, if you think you're going to be late or if you think you need to miss a meeting, just call our front desk and let LFO know. You can let the sub-co-chairs know as well, so that we know if we need to get someone else, like the Ways and Means co-chairs, to create a quorum so that we can convene, we can call them. We do not need to adopt rules for our subcommittee because we use the Joint Ways and Means rules that were adopted last Thursday. And as the co-chair noted, we do need to have a quorum to convene any kind of meeting, informational, public hearing, public testimony, whatever we're doing. One thing, you saw Eric corrected the mics a little bit. The mics are really sensitive. You don't need to get them really close to your mouth, but they do pick up side conversations, so be aware of that in case you say something you didn't intend for the listening audience to hear. And for the same reason, you want to keep your cell phones muted. We could hear in some of the other meetings if somebody gets a text. Don't want everybody to know that. When we get to a point where we vote on our 12 budget bills that have been assigned to us, mostly will do a voice vote. If there's a roll call needed, Dawn will call the roll for us. So we provide all of the meeting notices for everything on OLIS. We need 72 hours before the first public hearing on a bill and 48 hours thereafter. towards the end of session, the notice times tend to shrink. So that will change, but you'll be notified by your leadership when that happens. In some instances, we can carry over a bill to the next day if we don't get finished with our work. You have a daily agenda, what we call the daily agenda, on your desk in front of you, but that's the only material we will print out. Otherwise, everything else will be on OLIS, and your staff are welcome to print it out. You can look it up on your laptops, whatever works best for you that way. So in today's meeting materials, I included a list of the bills that have been assigned to our subcommittee and the LFO analysts who are responsible for each of those budgets, just so you know kind of what's coming up. I also provided an outline for the tentative order of things that we will hear over the next month and a half or so. Later this week on Wednesday, we'll start off with the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and then next week we'll have a number of other will agency presentations: the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability, Criminal Justice Commission, and probably the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. We are lucky in that our purview includes a number of very small agencies that tend to do just one thing, and very big agencies that will consume a lot of our time and attention. Before every agency's meeting, I try to get things posted a couple of days in advance, but there will be a number of sort of background documents for you for each agency that we talk about. We in LFO put together a little 2 or 3 page budget overview document just for that agency, and it's intended to just give you kind of the high-level numbers that you need to know, and a little bit of background about what the agency does, and then what are the policy issues that you're likely to hear when the agency comes in. So that'll be up for every agency. We'll also post the governor's budget document for the agency, and we'll talk more about the difference between the governor's budget document and the agency request budget and things like that. And then also all the agencies will also have a presentation, hopefully with pictures, that will get posted in advance. I've included in your materials some links to other background that you might want to look at ahead of time. Our office, LFO, puts together a pretty detailed analysis of all of the agency budgets at the end of every session. So the one that's posted right now is almost 2 years old, but it talks about the budget that agencies are currently working with and provides an analysis of that. We update that after the short session in every even-numbered year so that any actions that are taken then get reflected. And we also have a copy of the presentation that I'll go through here, which is an overview of Oregon's budget process that's always on our website, you know, in case you forget for a moment what that is. So the way that kind of an overview of all the work that we'll do this biennium is, we spend the first couple of months in what's called phase one, the budget hearings, and that's where the agencies come in and give us an overview of all of their work, what they do, how they're staffed, what their performance measures are, and kind of what their budget request has been. And then as we go through hearing from those agencies, talk about those things, you want to think to yourself, is there anything else I need to know more about? Because during phase two, we ask some agencies, but not all of them, to come back and give us a little more information. And the information that we want in phase two are answers to questions that you think you'll need to make decisions about their budget. So we're going to hear a lot of things that are extremely interesting, but we won't have time to address everything. So one way to kind of keep your eyes on the goal is to think, what do I need to know about this agency to make a decision about its funding? So that's a good way to think about phase two. Those meetings will take place in April. And like I said, we won't have every agency come in. One of the things I think
Madam
I omitted.
Chair.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
You certainly may.
Julie, thank you. This is my third or fourth different subcommittee, and I'm not necessarily looking for the savings that maybe I've been able to find in other budgets and other subcommittees, but and I know I'm not going to be in the inner room, you know, you and Steve and everybody else meeting with the co-chairs to get more into the weeds of the budgets, but I would really like, Madam Chair, to work with LFO to have a little better heads up. And let me give you an example. This is going to be a hard budgeting year, and I think we need to be looking at anything and everything we can within agency budgets to make sure that things are running as efficiently as possible. In 2011, because of some investigative work I had done, I found out that there were a number of unfilled positions in agencies. And the way that works is they come in and present their budget, the legislature gives them the money for their budget, and then they go and use the money for those unfilled positions for other things. And they didn't care for me calling that a slush fund. But I would really like for us to be able to work with LFO, not just in this subcommittee, I would hope it would be in all the subcommittees, to find out what kinds of questions should we be asking the agencies. Help guide us. What questions, what is there about their budget or the way they're doing business? Because in 2011, I was appalled. We without really taking any agency down to bare bones at all, we got back 550 positions. And I was really kind of angry over that, because that's fraud. When an agency comes in and says, we have this many positions and so our budget is this, you know, the assumption, if you haven't been around Ways and Means very long, the assumption is that, oh, you have that many employees. Well, I don't want to deal with semantics. You don't have that many employees. You have that many positions. So partly what I'm saying here for people that haven't done a lot of subcommittee work is that you really have to bone up and know the right questions to ask. And I would really like LFO's help this session in knowing the right questions to ask, because I don't want to cut any agency down to the bare bones.
Well,
they're providing great services to my constituents, all of our constituents, but we really need to know what we're dealing with here. And if they need $100,000 slush fund, then let's give them $100,000 slush fund. Let's not require them to come in and say that they're doing something they're really not, and they're going off and spending it elsewhere.
Couple of things, and I'm going to respond in a couple of ways, because there is a report that you can look at in order to get to, you know, the positions issue. The other is that both LFO staff as well as the your co-chairs are looking at and did look at and will continue to look at what we call vacant positions. You know, what happened, I can't talk about 2011. I can talk about your co-chairs and others. That's always hot. That's always on the radar screen to look at that, particularly when you start talking about having to do budget reductions. But there is the report that you as members can go online and Julie can help you, you know, with the linkage there. No question, as I said earlier, is a bad question to ask. Just know that. And the other thing I would encourage members to do is to, you know, for particularly if you're new, to really take serious when you get LFO sending information, to really read that information, to really begin to go on OLIS and to look at the various categories. And, you know, the one good thing about budgeting is that most of the stuff is transparent and it is online. You also, as I opened and said earlier, you probably not all of us have been blessed with having individuals on our committees, with individuals who have been there, done that, and not only do budget but do policy. And you've got one sitting right next to you, and that is Representative Barker. So, you know, but no, just don't hesitate to ask for assistance from whatever the question may be from Julie and LFO staff.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Representative Huffman. You can ask any of us any question. That's LFO is here. We staff, and you've read ahead in the book a little bit. I'll talk about this later, but we staff the Joint Ways and Means and all the subcommittees, but we are really a resource for the whole legislative body. So you can ask any of us any particular questions you want. To your point about what should you be asking, I'll certainly take that back to my colleagues, and we'll think about that. One of the documents that's on a list for today's meeting that I put up as background information are the instructions that we give to agencies about what they should include in their presentations to you in phase one. And so if you have a minute and read through that document, that tells you a lot about specifically what we want them to come forward and present to you, so that when you hear their presentations, you can think, oh, I don't think they told me what I wanted to hear about vacancies or about, you know, anything really. So that'll give you some sense of what we want them to know, to tell you. And then you can also look through it and say, well, you know, it sounds as though they're not going to present on the thing I want. You can pass that concern along to me, and I can let the agency know that that's a specific interest of the subcommittee.
Okay, great.
So that'll all be very important because, as the co-chair said, we will have a difficult task when we get to phase three and have to actually work on agency budgets. So we probably, I think the materials I put out there said this could start as early as April. Most of the agencies that we will work on are heavily dependent on the general fund. And for those of you who have been on Ways and Means before, you know that general fund budgets tend to get decided at the end. We typically wait for the May revenue forecast because that's the last one that comes out before the constitutional sine die. So we probably won't be working budgets early, but it is never too early to start preparing. So another additional piece of information I included is a budget brief that our office produced several years ago on budget notes. When we get down to working with agency budgets and wanting to provide specific direction to them about, you know, anything really this or that, we can include that in the budget report for the bill as a budget note. And budget notes don't have the force of law, and they shouldn't be included in order to replace a law that perhaps didn't go anywhere. But they can provide really specific direction to agencies about carrying out their mission that you all want them to do in the upcoming biennium.
I might add that the co-chairs must approve the budget notes before they actually go forward.
Thanks. So one of the things that Steve Bender covered in his presentation this morning that I thought was useful, and it's in the Joint Ways and Means rules, is that we have to report out all of the budget bills. And that's different from the way that policy committees operate. Policy committees, as you know, just get a big slug of bills, and not all of them will make it out. We have to report out all of the budget bills. So I thought that I would note that. We report them out. We will assign a carrier, someone who will go into full committee with the subcommittee's recommendation, talk about what happened in subcommittee. We write what's called a pony. We don't remember where the genesis of that word came from, but it's a little speech. And our office provides those. We also provide staff support in full and on the floor.
How many of the House members are on full?
I was curious.
Yeah. So all the Senate members are on full. I'm just looking at assignments.
How many ponies do I have to read, Madam Chair?
That's the question. You're on this sub and not mine. We've only got three on my sub.
Everyone that comes from a Tuesday or a Thursday.
So a few other subcommittee things that we may be called upon to do. We may get some budget-related fee bills. I can't off the top of my head think of any, but that's a possibility.
Yep. Well, I'm just thinking of fees and assessments, but that's not the same fee bill. But
yeah, I think that's different.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
How many committees do we have budgets for?
They're in your packet. You've got.
So we have 12 agencies. Was that? Yeah.
But inside of those, you have 12 agencies. But when she start talking, and I was trying to think of any fee bill that may come before us, and I can't not think of one.
Yeah. We really have quite a few general fund supported agencies, and they tend to have fewer fee issues than some of the other agencies do. So we may be asked to consider some federal grant requests. And toward the end of session, we will probably get some policy bills in our subcommittee. And we tend to get policy bills if they have a fiscal impact. And the reason that we get them is so that if it does have a fiscal impact, we can adjust the agency's budget that is affected to accommodate that if that policy bill moves. All right. So now we go into PowerPoint land, and I will have to ask you to tell me what time it is because the clock is behind me. So if you want me to stop, just tell me that our time is up, and I will not know any different.
What kind of sign do you want?
So the constitutional responsibility of the legislature is to produce a balanced budget. That is your task. So it's good that you all are on this committee because Ways and Means is how that happens. There are a couple of articles in the Constitution that together outline this requirement. You can't look at the Constitution and say, legislature, you must produce a balanced budget. Your specific tasks are to provide revenue, to pay current state expenses and interest, and to make appropriations so that you can draw from that revenue to pay the state's bills. There's also an article that says if there's a deficiency of funds, you have the opportunity to provide for levying a tax to make up the difference. So the state of Oregon's budget policy is based on this list of principles. I don't need to read through all of them, but it's the most important bullet is the first one, that your job is to balance estimated revenues and proposed expenditures, right? The budget, broadly speaking, is fiction. It's prospective. We think about going forward. So your task is to figure out how much money do we think we're going to get and what do we think we're going to spend. In doing that, you want to think about what do we want to achieve, and that's where sort of the policy making comes in. What do we want to achieve? What's our desired outcome? We want to make sure that there's a way of measuring program outcomes. We also, kind of to Representative Huffman's earlier point, want to encourage savings and investments that could avoid future costs, right? So we don't want to intentionally make anything worse. We also plan for both the short term and the long term. Sometimes it seems like a huge lift to just get a budget for the next biennium. But if in that budget we load it such that it creates a bigger cost for the following biennium, that can be a problem too. So we want to avoid doing that. So the Legislative Fiscal Office is both a place, it's right over there, and an organizational entity. And our job, broadly speaking, is to promote state fiscal accountability. We do that by providing research, analysis, evaluation of state expenditures. We look into the state's financial affairs, program administration, and agency operations. We also staff several other committees in addition to Joint Ways and Means, and I'll go through those a little bit later. The office has been around since 1959. I understand that the same legislation that established the fiscal office also created the emergency board. And we are a nonpartisan office. We are permanent staff. We are here all year round. We can answer questions kind of as they come up. And again, we provide support to the entire body in addition to Ways and Means. This is our organizational chart. Budget people love organizational charts. All this says is that we have 22 positions in our office. The legislative fiscal officer is Ken Rocco. The rest of us kind of follow in his wake. The little box in the bottom left there shows that we have 5 legislative analyst positions. Those are the folks who prepare fiscal impact statements. So I am a budget analyst in our office. I don't write fiscal impact statements, but I review them, and we have a group of talented people who specifically produce the fiscals for the bills. The rest of us work on agency budgets. We coordinate subcommittees. And we do other kind of research as assigned.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Curious, who took Darren's place?
Paul Siebert.
Paul did, okay. Never heard that, so thanks.
But Paul's been there forever, too.
Yeah.
Yes, Paul is a good institutional knowledge member of our team.
And this may be my time to put a plug in for Legislative Fiscal Office. You will find that in that office that there is a lot of experience and longevity. Individuals who have been there for a lot of sessions, and that that's extremely important when you start talking about putting together and crafting biennial budgets. And even though we do what we call, particularly for DHS, rebalances and what have you, and now that we've gone to annual sessions, have the ability, with unlike years ago, where we relied more heavily on e-board in order to, when there is a fiscal emergency, now there is a way to do some budget rebalancing without going to a very small group of legislators who actually controlled what happened in the interim. So I don't know how we'd ever get any of this accomplished without the staff. And I just need to put a plug in for them because they're very skilled and very knowledgeable at what they do. And also I know that they get rotated among the various agencies. Just when you get to where you're very extremely comfortable and what have you, they're sent to another agency. So that I think that's smart because we always talk about cross-training and making certain that our team knows, more than just their one skill set. So I just need to put a plug in for them because I really have a high trust in their abilities.
Thank you. So here are some of the things that we will be doing during session for you and for others. We review agency budgets in their various forms. We, of course, get a lot of questions about fiscal and policy issues that we chase down the answers to. We look at revenue sources, expenditure limitations, expenditure patterns, staffing levels, proposed law changes, all the bills that get a fiscal come through our office, and we review those. We're going to be talking quite a bit this session about the impacts of budget reductions or enhancements. We analyze those. We make recommendations to the legislature, and that's one of our statutory responsibilities. Your policy committee staff don't do that, but that's part of our role. So you can always ask us what we would recommend on a particular thing, and we will tell you. Like I said, we have a team that works on fiscal impact statements, and we generally facilitate the committee process and make sure that the budget bills all get done. We're here also during the interim when you are not, and we do a lot of things then as well. As Co-Chair Winters mentioned, the Interim Joint Ways and Means Committee and the Emergency Board meets during the interim, and so we look at agency requests and facilitate those through that process. We evaluate and audit programs if the legislature so directs us, or if some big thing comes up. We publish briefs. Some of us are prolific brief writers on budget topics, because we all love thinking about budget topics and other issues of interest to the legislature. We have a couple of regular reports that we're tasked with producing. We review state agency budget execution and operations at a very high level. It's the executive branch's job to execute the budget once you have put it in place. But we do kind of stay on top of that just to be ahead of any issues that might come up with that spending plan as it's executed. Then, of course, there are other duties as assigned. These are some of the other subcommittees, or the other committees, that we staff. We staff the Emergency Board, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, longest committee name ever, and the Transparency Oregon Advisory Commission. So the budget process is a two-year process. I spent a lot of years working for a local government where we estimated that we spent 380 days a year on our annual budget, and a biennial budget takes proportionately more time than that. We right now are at step six, if you look at the arrows. We are at the point of this process where the legislature reviews the materials from the executive branch and other sources. We're holding hearings, and we prepare the legislative balanced budget. There's a lot of acronyms that you will come across during your time in Ways and Means, and one acronym actually stands for two different things, which is confusing. You'll hear reference to the LAB. That's the legislatively adopted budget. It's the legislatively adopted budget right at the end of session when it is actually adopted. Thereafter, it becomes the legislatively approved budget. Same acronym. The difference between the two is that the legislatively approved budget is going to be the most current budget at any point in the following two-year cycle, because there are changes that get made to it that the legislature approves after adoption. So when you want to know, what the most up-to-date current budget is, it's the legislatively approved budget. For example, now at this point in the process, you'd want to refer to the legislatively approved budget because we've had a short session when changes were made, we've had an emergency board when changes are made, and that will be your most current numbers, right? But the beginning of the process starts July 1st. Agencies have an adopted budget, and they go forth and they execute on the budget. They use what's called an allotment plan in order to do that, and it's a way for the Department of Administrative Services to make sure that the agency is spending the dollars as they were approved or appropriated. So that's sort of flows into the second arrow, and right about when agencies are starting to execute on their new budget, they start preparing for the next one. Budgeting truly just takes a very long time. During the time that, there's now two interim periods between legislative sessions, right? There's the interim between the long session and the short session, and then there's the interim between the short session and the long session. During that first one, the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means meets during that intervening period of time. And the powers that interim committee can exercise is pretty limited. They're limited to hearing reports and hearing reports, pretty much. And the reason for that is that pretty close to the time we adjourn in June or July, the short session for the following year starts. There's really only about 6 or 7 months between those two sessions. And so the assumption is that most agencies can make it between their brand new budget and the middle of the year without a lot of intervening budgetary action. So budget issues can be dealt with in the short session. And then after the end of that one and before the next long session, that's when the emergency board meets. And the emergency board does have some powers to change budgets. They can increase budgets. They can approve federal grants. They can't decrease a budget. So if it were the case that it was, June of last year and we experienced a big revenue shortfall, the way that could be accommodated is that the governor could do an across-the-board reduction in the allotments, that process that lets agencies spend their budget. That has to be across the board. Or the governor could call the legislature into a special session and say, we have a problem, we need to rebalance the budget.
Just another point of clarity, or we can call ourselves in to session. Mm-hmm. The governor does not have the authority to line item decrease in budgets.
Correct.
He or she may do, as she said, cross the board, and that percentage has to be the same.
So, and as we learn more about agency budgets, you will come to understand more about what a broad brush that is, and how it might or might not work in any given situation.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm on the Public Safety Subcommittee. I've clicked on meeting materials. I've clicked on everything. And what am I doing wrong to access some of the materials that you
Eric's going to come help you out.
Give me a few tries to get it.
Oh, okay. Sorry for the interruption. I want to find out the list of our agencies and everything we've been talking about, but I... We're good.
All right. Chair. Yes, Representative Sanchez.
I have a question about that. So I'm used to dealing with budgets that, you say this is what you have, this is what you are going to be able to spend. You recognize a deficit of some sort or a necessary need, to have an increase or someplace. So I'm used to being essentially saying, you don't have it, you don't get to spend it. And I guess so I'm a little thinking here as you're talking about this, is this a situation where someone could say, well, we need this or this, and we either overspend a budget or some need comes up that gets spent and then we somehow or another are in a deficit long term? So I'm confused about that 6 or 7 months that somehow or another we need to change our budgets.
Let me give you an example. Particularly the agency, Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections does not actually control its input.
That makes sense.
So the budget could actually be budgeted around X number of inmates. And so there is a spike. There is a where it was budgeted at 12, let's say 1,200 for the sake of discussion, and they're at 1,500. And so the budget only accommodated 1,200. You then have a situation that you're going to have to make some corrections. Let's take, for example, a real life of where because of the population change at Coffee Creek and the capacity for women. And so there was the discussion that was taking place that if this continued, if this trend line continued upward, we would need to actually open up the old women's prison out on State Street. So these are budgetary, these are hydraulics that would require budgetary changes.
Madam Chair, I understand that piece, of course. That's certainly one of those things that definitely could change. I was thinking probably more along the line of DPSST in terms of this is how many staff we have, this is how many we are planning for or budgeting for, and somehow or another that shifts. That wasn't something.
Well, let's take DPSST, for example. I'm sure that they're going to come in and they're going to talk to us about the change that has occurred in the increase in the number of new officers and what have you as a result of retirements. Particularly, you'll see, and they'll make the case or try to make the case that there is a spike or an increase when there is discussion in this building about PERS. And so when there is the PERS discussion, you tend to get individuals who will suddenly say, uh-oh, I better take mine now or, you know, whatever. So they will talk about the need of the various counties and cities now who will have a larger group of individuals who will come in for training. And that has their budgetary impact. And so there's several reasons why budgets go through changes. They'll make their case, or not.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and also Representative Sanchez. When you set a budget for an agency, you either give it a general fund appropriation or an expenditure limitation, which we'll talk about later. That is the legal limit for that agency, and they cannot overspend that. So the process that we've been talking about is, like the co-chair said, if there's an emergency, if something comes up, if they can reasonably foresee that their budget isn't going well and they can't manage to it. In other words, in the Department of Corrections example, they can't just let out a lot of inmates. Then they do need to come and talk to the legislature about that. So that would be the kind of thing that might come up and the reason for that. But no, otherwise they will not overspend. So in the odd year sessions, there's also a budget process. And that is, let's see, odd year session. This is where we are now, right? So the governor's budget became public on December 1st. That is because our governor was re-elected or elected, had been serving prior to being elected. If there were a brand new individual, that new governor would have a little more time to produce a budget because December 1st, as you know, is only 3 weeks after election date. So before that time and since that time, our office has worked with the co-chairs of Joint Ways and Means to prepare for session, to get ready to talk about the budget for the upcoming biennium. They work with leadership to set the timelines that we follow. And the co-chairs put out several weeks ago a budget framework, right, that sets kind of their high-level guidelines for what they want the subcommittee work to look like in the session. We provide information and make recommendations during this process. The subcommittees meet and make recommendations to full Ways and Means. Full Ways and Means is where the vote happens, and then the budget bills go to both chambers, floors, and hopefully get approved and passed on to the governor. So I want to talk a little bit about the fund types that Oregon budgets. right? These are fund types. They're not specific funds. The four fund types that we budget are the general fund, lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds, right? So when you see budget requests, it'll have those four fund types, and those all have some different pros and cons to them. The general fund is considered to be fungible because it is your discretionary funding source. It is the contents of the general fund are about 93% taxes. Those are income taxes. We are a state that has kind of two main revenue sources. Local governments rely on property taxes. The state relies on the income tax. It's a very volatile revenue source, and that's part of why we have trouble biennium over biennium getting to a balance. The lottery funds are dedicated to particular things, to economic development, to education, and to parks and salmon habitat restoration.
And the new one is veterans.
And veterans, thank you. Other funds and federal funds are those things that are dedicated by either law or by their federal authority to specific things. Other funds might be the state gas tax, which is dedicated in the Constitution towards roads, and federal funds might be money that we get for the federal SNAP, food stamp program. And we have to spend those dollars on those things. We don't have any discretion to do that differently. There's one other distinction about other funds and federal funds, and this gets back to what I said earlier about expenditure limitation. The way that you as the legislature set limits on state agency budgets is different based on the fund type. For the general fund, you make an appropriation. You take the pie of general fund and say, we appropriate to you this wedge of the general fund. The lottery fund, because it's dedicated for particular things, you allocate lottery funds to agencies for those particular things. So we say of the total pie of lottery funds, we allocate this much to economic development, this much to state parks, etc. The other funds and the federal funds tend to be, because they are for specific things, at least fees, for example, in the state budget tend to have statutory language that says something like, there is created a fee for the State Department of Beekeeping, and it is continuously appropriated to that department for the purpose of maintaining bees, right? So the statute says that, but you want to make sure that the agency has a reasonable spending plan, so you set an expenditure limitation for that function. So you say to the Department of Beekeeping, you guys have a fee that's dedicated for you, but you can use this much of it in the upcoming biennium. So both other funds and federal funds have expenditure limitations on them. The last point violates what I just told you, because there is also a category called non-limited. It's a category that we don't use very much, because why would you want to establish something that is non-limited? But there are good reasons to do that. There are some payments that we get, for example, from the federal government that are entitlements to individuals, and we pass those through to those individuals, and the amount that we pass through depends on the number of individuals who qualify. You don't have any way to know that, so it wouldn't make sense to put an expenditure limitation in place for something like that. So there are a very few categories for non-limited expenditures that you might see. So those are the sort of funding sources that you can use, or the ways, the buckets that that we can put things into. Another way to look at the budget is what types of expenditures do we authorize. So our budget tracks expenditures in these categories. Personal services includes everything that you would think of that would go along with having employees, right? It's wages, it's benefits, it's Social Security payments, it's things like that. We also track in the budget positions, and full-time equivalents, right? And the difference between those two is a position you could think of as like a whole person. It's a whole person working a whole biennium every, you know, all 24 months. Very often we start programs in state agencies where we say we want to start this program on January 1st of the even-numbered year. So we want a position, but we only want it for 12 months of the biennium. And that would be a 0.5 FTE, right? It's half of a full-time equivalent because it's only there for half of the biennium. Services and supplies is basically everything else you think you would need if you were running any kind of state agency. Office supplies, rent, legal fees, pencils, contracts, all the other things that you might need for your operations. A good part of the state budget is made up of special payments, which are pass-throughs to other jurisdictions to do the things that we would like them to do. One example of that is passing money through for education. Another example of that would be in Oregon, counties operate, with the exception of two, counties operate parole and probation offices, and we want them to do that. So we pass through funding for the operation of parole and probation offices. So there's quite a lot of those kinds of payments. Capital outlay is for sort of big things that cost more than $5,000 and are expected to last more than 2 years and are going to be used more than once. Capital improvements are construction. If you're remodeling this room or your building or what have you, that costs less than $1 million. And major construction or capital construction is actually dealt with in a different subcommittee of Joint Ways and Means. And that includes big projects, things that cost more than $1 million or $3 million for the Oregon University system. And those limitations, because those are, tend to be things that take a long time to do, those expenditure limitations are established for 6 years. And that's to give the agency enough time to complete the project that you authorized for them to do. The product of borrowing to do those big projects is debt service. So you will see debt service in several of the agencies that we will review, the Department of Corrections, the Youth Authority, those agencies that operate facilities.
Debt service, and you also get some of the other agencies, but it's one that you should pay particular attention to because it has an impact on overall ability with what's left for operation and what have you. So if you're getting too much debt, it's just like being at home and you're getting too much debt and not enough revenue coming in, you could end up with problems.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So to get further into the tiny, tiny details, the budgetary control that you all set up with appropriations or expenditure limitations are in appropriation bills. Those bills are compiled in the session laws, so you won't find them in the ORS if you go to look. You want to look in Oregon laws for the current biennium. Appropriation bills set the very highest limit. They are not detailed into the expenditure categories that I just took great pains to walk you through. It's not that you won't need to know that again. It's just it won't be in your appropriation bills. And the appropriation bills are written by fund type, and they might be just the whole agency. If it's a small agency, so you might just have a single appropriation for the general fund. Or if it's a bigger agency, the Department of Corrections, for example, you might have a general fund appropriation for prison operations and one for health care and one for community corrections, things like that. So it really kind of, it depends on the agency, it depends on history. We are able to change that if you find an agency and you're like, wow, they just have a big general fund appropriation. It would be better to see that at a different level. We can do that with an amendment. Every appropriation bill comes with a budget report. And the budget report doesn't have, again, the force of law, but it accompanies the bill and it details what is included in it, right? If you get a bill with just a big number, you think you'll remember that forever, trust me. But 2 months later, you'll say, what was in that? And the budget report contains the detail about what is behind the appropriation or the limitation that you set. And as we talked about a little bit earlier, budget notes are included in the budget reports, and those are directives to the agency to do a particular thing.
Any questions? Good.
All right. The appropriation bills have a particular number to distinguish them from all the other bills that you will see. The House bills start at 5,000 and the Senate bills start at 5,500. The practice has been for an agency every other year to switch being House bill and being a Senate bill. So 1 year the Department of Corrections will be a Senate bill, this year it will be a House bill. Oregon has about 90 agencies, just to give you the scope of all the budgets that are being looked at through Ways and Means. We have an agency that ranges from even smaller than $400,000 to large. The Department of Corrections budget is 3 point something billion this year. Like I said, you think you'll remember that number. Mm-hmm. Bonding and capital construction bills are separate. And those will go to the capital construction sub. You probably know that in Oregon, we have a single subject rule for bills, and the Oregon Constitution limits appropriation bills to just state what the current expenses for the upcoming biennium are. So typically at the end of session, we have a bill called the program change bill. And if a program needs to change in order to implement the budget that you set for the agency for the upcoming biennium, we have to put the program change, the thing, in that other bill in order to meet this requirement of just stating the appropriation. The other bill that we tend to do at the end of session is called the emergency fund bill, and that is where dollars are appropriated to the emergency fund to deal with emergencies in the interim. And also, typically, a number of other appropriations are made in that bill as well for small things that come up at the end of the biennium. So we talked about some of this already, and I won't repeat it. We will go through our phases. We will look at budget bills. We may draft a budget note. If you think you have, when it gets to this point, this is a little premature, but when it gets to this point and you think you want to include a budget note, talk with the subcommittee co-chairs. They will take it to the Joint Ways and Means Committee co-chairs and they will approve it or not. And federal grants. The reason that we have to approve federal grants is because typically new federal grants come with some expectation that we do a new program. And you, as the legislature, need to decide whether or not you think that new program should go forward in our state.
I want to expand on that. Because it's important to understand that if it's new and you begin something and you will always have a population or someone who benefits or not benefit from what you start. And if you start it and begin, and then let's say a year or two later you can't continue it, you have it's far difficult to take something back than it is to start. And so the federal counterparts are very good at starting something new. The other one, and I was around when we did not accept the federal dollars unless it met with the policy, the overarching goal of the state of Oregon. And there's a real reason for that, because if it's within what we want to see happen, it becomes a benefit. If it isn't what we want to see happen, it becomes a detriment. So there's a real scrutiny on federal grants and what have you that come to us, and legislative fiscal office reviews them first, and they'll recommend yay or nay. They don't always tell us yes, go forward and do good things. They will point out some of the pitfalls and the problems to us. I just needed to put that one on record too, because it's not as easy as it seems.
Thank you, Co-Chair. That's a very good point. That is true. We may hear reports. Sometimes budget notes say that an agency should report, so we may hear some reports. We may choose to hold informational hearings if there's a topic that you're particularly interested in. Talk to the co-chairs, and we can arrange for informational hearings. We can invite in people that you'd like to hear from. We talked about we probably won't see any fee bills, but we might. And policy bills, we typically tend to see toward the end of the session. So we can talk more about those when we actually get one. So
is this a good place? This is a good place to stop for today.
We have another day of this kind of fun scheduled for tomorrow, and so it might be just as well to complete our presentation.
And if you have any burning questions, you might want to jog them down for tomorrow, but I think this is a good place for us to stop, and I will pass the gavel on to my co-chair for after I adjourn. But I will actually impress on my two senators that the House co-chair cannot begin unless we're all here. So and those of you who know me know that I'm a real stickler for being on time. And I'm a real stickler when it's time for us to go into work session. Because if you're not here and we don't have the bodies that we need in order to complete our work, in order to pass a bill or a budget into full committee, it just delays what we're doing. The other thing that we can do, and I would not like to do it, but where we have an impasse that we can't go forward as co-chairs, we can call in the officers or the other co-chairs to come in to take your place. And I don't like to do that, because I think that we all benefit from being here and putting our votes on record. So, but just know, I'm glad that you're all here. We also, I hope that Julie gets into it, of looking at tours that you may or may not want to attend as members of this committee, like going and visit the DPSST or McLaren or some of those, just to get some familiarity. But anyway, so if there's no, yes.
I'll go on any of them you set up. I always think it's really useful to do that, and thank you for taking
And I know that my good House member, because he and I participated, Representative Barker, would all encourage you, if you're asked, to participate in the situational, they're not skits either. It's the use of force.
Scenarios, the training.
Scenarios and training at DPSST. I did. I know that
Representative Sanchez did.
And I believe that it's worthwhile that you also, if you're asked to do it, it's time consuming, but I think it's worthwhile.
Happy to do it.
And with that, no further questions or.
Well, I'll add one note. So, for those who are new on a subcommittee. Kind of looking over here primarily, you guys, as far as understanding the budget, is you can get as involved as you desire. There are many members of subs who show up, ask questions once in a while, and that's their input. And there are some who really dive in and might pick an agency or a specific, part of a budget, and they really get that information, and that's very helpful if anyone chooses to do that. So.
Well, I'm a little more, I would hope I would hope that members of this committee view public safety and I'm sure that I can get some amens. Public safety is a system. And just taking parts doesn't get it with the system. You know, I can, you know, from everything from the front end to where we're going to get into prevention with juveniles and OIA, from DAs to courts to law enforcement, Oregon, you know, invest in a system. Not a piece of that system, but the entire system, whether we're talking about defense attorneys, whether we're talking, you know. So I would encourage, I've learned a lot over the many years that I have been here. I've learned how it impacts, my communities and citizens inside of my communities. You may come here with one bias or biases, and you may leave out of here with a much better understanding of how this system works. And not only that, an appreciation that you may not have had before being on this committee. So I would encourage as much as you can, and I know that we all have a lot of assignments in this building, and we all have a lot of committee work in this building. But I would encourage you for me personally, budget people are, and Ways and Means is a special place, because this is where the rubber hits the road, and this is where what you want to get funded may or may not get funded. So I would encourage you to be as participating and as active as you can be. And with that, we are adjourned.
Amen.
So here's the deal.